Our disaster recovery plan goes something like this.
You mean all the technology is going to break?
Yes.
Is there any way this collapse of civilization thing could affect me personally?
I think it might.
Okay, then. You have my full support to fix the problem. Unless it involves any sort of resources or decisions or effort on my part. Remember, money is no object. Unless, of course, you plan to spend it.
Let's do this.
What is virtualization?
You're gonna learn today.
Innovate like a startup. Deliver like an enterprise.
I hope you're coffeeed up and ready because it's gonna be a great day.
I know you're gonna dig this.
Oh, yeah.
You're listening to the Virtually Speaking Podcast with Pedro Lero and John Nicholson.
Good afternoon and welcome to the Virtually Speaking Podcast, episode number 131. My name is Pete Fletcher, a.k.a. Pedro Arrow, and John's out this week, so joining me as co-host is Mr. Glenn Sizemore. Glenn, how's it going, man?
I'm doing great, Pete. How are we doing, man?
Doing well, man. So, Glenn, VMworld's over. You know, we're all trying to unpack all the content. But one of the things I took away from VMworld was a really good conversation that you, myself, and Pete Keeler had around communication, communicating the importance of certain technologies and getting budget from your leadership. It had reminded me of a conversation I had had with Keeler a couple of years back when I first met him. He wrote a blog post about it entitled Getting the Big IT Purchase Approved. And I think this is something that a lot of IT folks struggle with. You know, they're in this position where IT has become so vital to the business. It's no longer just this thing that businesses put up with. I mean, at this point, IT is the enabler, but it can also make or break you. If your stuff's not available, you go out of business. And so I think a lot of IT administrators struggle with the ability to articulate the importance of certain things. In the case of our conversation, Glenn, the importance of disaster recovery. And so let's get this started. I'm going to invite our guest this week. He's been on the podcast before. As I mentioned, he wrote the blog, Mr. Pete Keeler. Pete, welcome back to the podcast.
Hi there, Pete, and hi, Glenn. Happy to be here. And this is always an interesting topic, so I'm thrilled that we're going to be talking about this.
Pete is right.
Absolutely. All right, Pete, I don't want to go word for word on your blog post, but I did want to use that a little bit. I had some questions about that. But Glenn, why don't you kick us off? What are some of the questions you've been having from customers pertaining to this subject?
Well, it's interesting, right? I mean, if I go all the way back to my time as an administrator, back when I used to run one of these environments instead of trying to sell the software that empowers them, you know, budgets were, it was one of the biggest parts of my life, figuring out, you know, how much extra money might we have this year? What kind of software could I try to purchase? Could we maybe afford that monitoring extension for the core platform? Like the way that IT, or at least in my experience, the way that IT administrators put themselves through backflips, trying to figure out ways to take the money that they've been given and extend it so that they can get everything that they need to get done within that bucket. And when I made the transition to a vendor space and started having different kinds of conversations with different people inside the business, when I started being exposed to executives and what it looks like at the e-staff of a corporation when they're figuring out what an investment looks like, it just opened my eyes to the fact that most administrators don't even begin to understand how to go about having this conversation with the business that employs them.
Oh yeah.
And over the past 6-7 years, I've had this conversation probably 500 or 600 times. And it's just, it's almost the same conversation every single time. It's like, oh yeah, we need DR, but you know, this is all we can afford. And you start to pick that apart and realize, oh, you just don't even know how to have this conversation.
Absolutely. And I want to dive into the DR conversation. Heck, maybe we can even leave some good tidbits for folks to communicate that specific issue. But why don't we take a step back and look at the bigger picture of just communicating anything in terms of budget to IT. One personal example I have is when I was an administrator, I worked for a small business many moons ago, and they didn't even want to pay for licensing. And I had to express to them the importance of paying for licensing. And they were like, well, can't we just get like an MSDN subscription and then just use? I'm like, no, you will get sued. You cannot do that. And having to explain this to a small business is one thing. But as you start to get to larger enterprises, if they're looking at IT as an inconvenience to their budget or as an inhibitor, there needs to be some rethinking. That's my opinion. What about you, Pete?
Yeah, you know, one of the things that I think that many fall victim to in this industry is that we want to focus so much on the technical acumen or the knowledge that we have about the technologies that we're implementing that we want to implement. But there's very little regard for how we're going to go about expressing how this will benefit an organization. What are the number one and number two elements that are most important to that organization? And what you are proposing or what you're thinking about as a major concern, would that be addressing some of those concerns? And circling back and really taking a look at that broader picture of why does your organization exist in the first place? Then try to align what you feel is important from a technology standpoint and make sure that that falls in alignment with what the overall goals are.
Yeah, it's fascinating, man, because IT has moved over the past 20 years from the cost center that everyone associated it as in the early 90s to this heart of the business. It's just absolutely critical to absolutely everything that happens. But I really think the people who occupy this profession, they still feel as though they're the cost center, you know? And the reality is most organizations, they don't view IT that way anymore. They understand that email and instant messenger, you know, Slack, like this is just modern business. This is how deals are done. Tools like Zoom and WebEx are just as important as plane fare and taking a client out to lunch often, you know, being able to get stuff done. So it's funny how the world has changed. And yet as an industry, we haven't really kept up in that aspect. And yeah, exactly.
You know, and oftentimes we see that as a burden or that an IT administrator or an IT team sees that as a burden, that how do we get this across the goal line in order to get, you know, this new software purchased or this new hardware purchased? And what I see it as, and what I believe many should sort of rethink it as, is it's really an opportunity. It's an opportunity for you to showcase what you can provide for that business, for that organization that is desperately trying to figure out how they can be more efficient, more productive, and in the end, make more money and all of that other good stuff. So it's such a tremendous opportunity.
I agree completely. So before we get into the communication part, like how we communicate to them, I think on your blog post, you said first there's a preparation step. So aside from understanding what you want to communicate, what else can we do to prepare to have those big conversations with our leadership?
Well, the first step I would encourage anyone to do is to take a step back from your day-to-day activities that you're, you know, muddied down in, that you're looking into the daily operations and where that focus is at. Take a step back and really understand what the goals that you are trying to achieve with this new proposal. And you can only do that with understanding what the pain points are of the organization.
Yeah.
And a great way to go about doing that is simply to ask some of the key staff in the organization, which can in turn provide so many other benefits because you look like you are the enabler now. You are their advocate for so many initiatives. And part of that is gaining and building that trust. So my number one recommendation in the onset is to really first understand what their pain points are within the organization. And then you can kind of take it from there.
Yeah, absolutely. And you know, something else on those lines, I find in these conversations that I've had specifically around disaster recovery, they already know that. Like it's amazing to me. You sit down with these lead architects and they're having very deep, detailed conversations about like LUN queue depth and whether or not to team NICs. And in the same breath, they're telling you that the way that they make money is by selling insurance in the Midwest to women under 36. Like they completely understand who it is that they support and what their problems are. I think what the missing element, and this is really where my conversations tend to go, is the knowledge that the business is interested in their opinion, right? It's a two-way street. That budget doesn't just come because they take a look at the yearly revenue and go, well, we made a lot of money. So here, IT, you can have some, I guess, right? Yeah. It that budget exists because somebody sat down and said, hey, boss, if you give me X amount of money, I can do Y result. If you give me Z amount of money, you get W result. Do you want Z or W? Which one do you want, right? And it's kind of opening your eyes to that consultancy aspect of the job. Even when you're in an internal organization, you work for the same company your entire life. When it comes to budgeting, when it comes to new projects, you got to look at yourself like a consultant. Your job is to bring them the decision, not make it for them.
Yeah, that's a good point. You want to bring an informed decision. So you do the preparation. Probably the fear a lot of times, you know, will be like, is this going to, you know, am I going to be judged for, you know, giving this bad news to this company that they have to spend money, you know. But honestly, as Pete, I think the way you articulate it was good, is that this should be used as an opportunity to really bring value. Is, hey, look, I see this needs to happen, and we can be better as a company, better, safer, more highly available if we take these steps. And showing that importance, I really think, brings the value that Glenn just mentioned. So let's say we've already got the preparation done. Pete, the next step is the presentation, and I think the way you mentioned it in your blog post is you likened it to the Shark Tank, the show, the Shark Tank, and so I have this visual of like somebody walking in to make that presentation. And so tell me what that looks like. What do you do when you're actually going to present? What should you think about? Go ahead, Pete, present.
So one of the things, and I think one of the reasons why I used that analogy, is that it serves such a good framework for preparation. Anyone who has seen that TV show, you can see that those who are really well prepared do much better than those who are not. I mean, it's just that simple. And part of that preparation comes into understanding the problems of the business, understanding the impact that this new proposal would have, how much of a burden would it be on that organization, but what would be the outcome? How would that look like as an end result? So being able to present things as a simple problem statement to the organization, what you propose, it may be one or more things, and then what's it going to cost and what they get in return. That's the basis that we see for any of those proposals out on Shark Tank or within your own management team meeting, which may very well feel like Shark Tank at times. But having that level of preparation, understanding where you fit, for instance, within the realm of IT budgeting for your vertical, for instance, I think that one's a great one because you can be prepared for those questions when they're asked.
So Glenn, let's use the example of DR, right? This is the conversation that you've been having that people are asking you about as well. So you're on Shark Tank. You've walked in. You have to be the one that actually says, this is what we need to do. What are your tips?
Well, so I think Pete brought up the most important element, which is don't ever walk in the room with a problem. You're walking in with a menu of solutions. Those solutions have different price points and they deliver different value based on those price points, but you're not giving them a headache. You're presenting them with a path forward to solving a problem that they didn't know existed in most instances.
Ah.
And that's really important to controlling how the information is going to be viewed. Because if you just walk in the front door and you're like, hey, boss, so, you know, I started looking at things and I realized we haven't backed anything up in 6 years. Like, that's just not going to be taken very well. That's going to cause the person you're talking to be mildly panicked, starting to think about how did this happen? Oh God, I'm so exposed. I hope the board doesn't find out. Like, it's not going to go well, right?
Who do I fire?
Yeah. Who can I blame? Exactly. If instead you walk in the front door and it's a conversation of, hey, so I was doing some looking around and I noticed that we haven't done any backups in like 6 years. So I got to looking and it turns out that we're already authorized for software A. And it's going to give us X, Y, and Z. But, you know, I think that instead we'd be better served if we actually bought software B, which is going to be slightly more expensive, but it gives us this instant recovery capability and we can control our long-term. Like, this is the kind of conversation you want to have, right? You're not giving them a problem. You're presenting an array of solutions and you want those solutions to have two things that are always true. The first is you don't ever present something that you're not comfortable with them accepting. Everything that you show needs to be something where if they pick it, you're happy. Don't ever put something in there just as a bad example of, well, we'll include this to show them what a bad one is or what a super expensive example is, because they might pick it, right? Yeah. And now you're stuck with it because you presented it. So that's the first rule. And the second rule is I highly recommend taking a retail approach to this and doing a good, better, best approach, right? Going ahead and taking a look at the problem. So in this example, disaster recovery, you can actually solve disaster recovery with a backup product in most examples, but your time to recovery is atrocious, right? Because you got to start by building an environment, get everything installed and configured, and then you can start to restore your workload. But it is a path to recovering from a disaster, right? So that would be your good example. Your better example would be something a little more optimized, a little more controlled, perhaps more cost optimized with better recovery points, something like a cloud adjacent disaster recovery where you're rehydrating into an environment such as like VMware Cloud and AWS, something like that. And then your best example would be hot DR. So having a secondary site available with Site Recovery Manager managing that environment. And those are going to have three different price points, right? And then when you're having that conversation, you're not just sitting there going, hey, here's a problem. You need to put me in charge of figuring out how to solve it. You're just presenting, I did some research. I used my domain expertise. I found a problem inside the business and I found three solutions. The cheapest solution doesn't solve all of our problems, but it's better than nothing. The middle point is going to solve our problems, but you know, it's got some trade-offs. And then if we can afford it, here's my recommendation for our absolute best way of solving this.
You know, Glenn, I think that is extremely well put for one key reason, that being extremely concise with that team that you're presenting to or that you're sending the proposal to is absolutely critical. If you go long-winded or if you get into a level of detail that is simply not necessary, you're going to lose them. And you may lose the opportunity to have that as a successful solution in that environment. So having that just really distilled down into the key points that matter, what's important now is the key in all of that.
Yeah, I would imagine there are different ways to approach that. And some level of consulting soft skills would be needed. You know, you don't want to go in there and say, the sky is falling. You need to give me this money or you're going to go out of business. But at the same time, you want to make sure that you do your due diligence. You can present something that is an informed decision, because God forbid you go in there and say, hey, we really should do this for option A that only costs this much. And they are like, all right, yeah, let's do that. And then when you go back, you find out that actually option A costs more than option C.
Well, it's one of the reasons why I think you need to stay focused in the resolution, right? And not talk about the problem. I mean, you need to talk about the problem because the problem sets up why you're talking about the resolution in the first place. But so here, let me give you an example. I had a conversation with a large university out in California about 3 years ago now, and they had almost a petabyte of information sitting inside one building with absolutely no secondary copies. And like, this is super important information that's part of a lot of really higher education and mission critical research programs. And, you know, I just got to talking to the team and the IT staff was freaking out because they knew that they needed like four times the budget that the university was planning on giving them for them to truly do the job that they needed to do. But because of the way the school worked, the way that their funding came, they just didn't see any path to getting that money. They were like, well, it's never going to happen. So how do we do this, Mr. Vendor? Give me the magic solution where I don't have to actually solve this problem. And instead, what we ended up doing was honestly teaching these people how to have a conversation with the business and just said, look, when you get home, grab your IT director, tell him that you just noticed something and you'd like 5 minutes of his time. Take him into the data center, point at that 3.5-foot pipe that's running through the roof of your freaking building and say, if that thing were to leak, we would lose 20 years of human research and there's nothing we can do to get it back.
Visual.
Like, does he know that that risk exists? Has anyone pointed out that this entire trough of information is so exposed? And the truth was, the answer was no. No one had ever told them that this existed. And all it took was just coming forth and going, oh, by the way, we just realized this. Don't ask us how we got here, but it turns out like we're super exposed right now. We're running in a high risk environment. We just realized this. And this is what it's going to take to fix it. Now, in this university's case, did they fix it that year? No, they didn't. But the next year they did, because they knew it was a problem that they had to get to.
So let's just say you know the problem, right? You know that the backup or the DR needs to be there. It's currently not there. And you want to offer these solutions, but your level of expertise in this field is not all knowing. So obviously you're going to have to lean on vendors and all that. But, you know, and we are vendors ourselves, so we know this better than anything. But who can you trust? And, you know, sometimes there's a temptation to look at a vendor and say, is that the best solution for me or is that the best solution for you? So how do you decipher between what is truly the best solution for you? Who can you trust?
Well, I think from my perspective, and Pete, I'd be interested in your take on this as well. But from my perspective, like there's no grand overarching theory. You can't sit there and be like, well, don't trust these guys and you can absolutely trust those guys. But the reality is you need to challenge your vendors, right? You need to take your problems to them, but you need to push back not just on price, but on capabilities, right? And force them to sharpen their pencil, force them to reach up within their organizations, use their own resources inside those companies to get you a solution. Your job, when you're working through one of these spaces, you're the quarterback. You understand what your company needs. You understand the problem that you're trying to solve. Your vendors are the running backs and wide receivers. It's their job to get open. You're just picking who to throw the ball to.
I like that.
Yeah, I think that's a great way to put it, Glenn. One of the things I think that a lot of the vendors go into an organization looking to help an organization out with, they're not quite sure what you need in the first place. So it's incumbent upon you to help them understand what those needs are. And I've found just from my own personal experience many moons ago is that just being very honest with them and helping them understand what some of the constraints were within, you know, the relative options that I had for the organization that I was working with, that can really clear the table and help establish, you know, a base level of understanding on what options may be possible, what sort of a time frame may be possible as well. The key is that, you know, they have a job to do, and many of them are really trying to do just as good of a job in their role as you are in yours, and have respect for that. And I think the end result certainly can be much better than perhaps a level of acrimony that has a tendency to kind of creep in.
Yeah. Glenn, you're the VMware Cloud guy, so this one's more for you. I'm curious, when you're looking at solutions, when you're talking to vendors and you want to find the right solution, there are huge differences between, say, an on-premises solution compared to, say, a DR in the cloud solution. So what are some of your experiences talking to customers recently with that, getting over that challenge to, you know, not saying one's better than the other, but when they're weighing this decision, you know, versus, you know, cloud DR versus on-premises, what are some of the conversations you're having?
That's a great question. Before I answer that, though, I just want to tack on to what Pete was just saying. A hint for the admins out there when you're dealing with your vendors, something that served me very well for the 15 years that I was driving the stick on one of these data centers, ask them what to not use their product for. I would never trust a vendor who did not tell me what their product did not do, because architecture is a series of choices. When you go down one road, you're closing the option to the other. So when a product excels at A, that means that it decided that it didn't want to do B. And if the vendor's not willing to tell you not to do that, then maybe that's not somebody that you should trust. When it comes to VMware Cloud on AWS, though, these conversations tend to come down to two real things. Are we dealing with a time opportunity, right? A cost, or are we dealing with a complexity problem? Those are the two kind of factors that, in my experience, in the conversations that thus far I have been part of, tend to be the tipping points where it becomes a, yeah, you definitely need VMware Cloud on AWS, or you definitely should take a look at VMware Cloud on Dell EMC. Because, you know, if it is a transient resource, right? If we're dealing with a time problem, right? We've got a for instance, a common use case for VMware Cloud on AWS is materials and acquisitions. A company will come in, company A buys company B. Right? One of the very first things that occurs is they say, okay, well, we've got duplicate IT staffs. We need to consolidate these efforts. And then where possible, we need to remove the duplication. So we want to go from two exchange environments to one, that sort of thing, right? Mm-hmm. Typically those exercises also carry a whole bunch of other edicts that the average admin is not aware of. Like, well, company B had a different DR site and company A's decided that you've got 20 days to get out of that place. And those kind of moves typically are kind of hard to do, but you're time bound. So speed is important. And VMware Cloud on AWS gives you the ability to get a production ready vSphere environment anywhere in the world within 2 hours. And within six, we can be migrating workload into that cloud environment. With tools such as HCX, yeah, we've got customers that have moved thousands of virtual machines a month. So if you're in one of these time crunches where time matters, you need to get your business rehosted somewhere else, VMware Cloud on AWS is almost unmatched in the market at solving that problem.
Yeah, it's definitely a unique advantage.
Yeah, for sure. The other thing, though, at the other side of that aspect, though, is companies that just recognize the fact that their domain expertise is not managing infrastructure. You know, one of my favorite instances is a software company. They write a CDN backend platform, and they took an honest look at their infrastructure and their operations and said, "Why do I have VI admins? I'm not big enough for this, right? I don't need to own infrastructure. Just let me rent the end state." And for them, it made a lot of sense for them to take their existing IT infrastructure staff. They didn't get rid of them. They just moved them, right?
Repurposed,
the people who
yeah.
used to try to be a full stack admin and wear the SQL hat and the AD hat and the VMware hat and the storage hat and the network hat, right? They just took five of those hats off, and they're worried about the ones that are actually critical to the day-to-day process of writing and running this backend CDN network, right? And in those two scenarios, VMware Cloud, because it is a managed platform where you're guaranteed an end result, can absolutely swing those dollars and digits in a way that just nothing else there can. Now, when I start talking about a customer who their primary concern is cost, right, and particularly long-term cost, those conversations, we very quickly end up in an environment where we're trying to figure out like what is appropriate for VMware Cloud and where everything else is going to go. So it definitely depends on what specifically the customer is trying to do. And in our case, like, look, we don't have a vested interest. You know, any application on any device in any cloud at any point, you know, we don't care. You want to run it in your own data center, we'll let you do that. You want to run it on the hardware that you pick, we'll let you do that. But if you also would like to offload this problem to us, we'll take a first-class responsibility in this, in delivering an end result and guarantee to a certain point that that end result is going to occur.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. All right. So we've prepared, we've researched, we've communicated with our vendors. We now understand what solution we want. We pick the right DR solution. Our customer, we have buy-in. What happens next, Pete?
Well, the one thing that I would highly recommend, and this actually ties back into exactly what Glenn was referring to here just a few moments ago, is that if the proposal was a success and you've been given the green light, the number one thing you want to focus on is fast results. You have to show that. It is so critically important for you and your organization. Oftentimes when we've heard challenges that many administrators have had in the past about, you know, they make some reference to the fact that their organization won't let them invest in this new technology and so forth. Oftentimes you can kind of do a little bit of a retrospective and look back and see if that administrator or if that IT team ever showed what the results were of the last large capital expenditure. So that's key. We want to be able to show the results fast and then be able to express those in a way that's meaningful for these stakeholders.
Yeah, it's along those lines, right? It's one of the reasons why we always talk about reporting in Site Recovery Manager and vSphere Site Recovery, because not because the administrator needs it, they don't. They're running the product. They understand what it does and what it doesn't do. The reason the reports are there is so that you can automatically feed that information to the upper echelons that need to know that you're actually following through, yeah, that you've actually configured this and you moved the risk point from high to manageable to low to none, right? When they see that, when they see you follow through and actually use this money to do what you said you were going to do, then as Pete said, the next time you come to them with a new problem and a get well plan, you've now built that trust that they can not only trust you as that trusted advisor, that internal consultant who brought them the problem that they should pay attention to, but they can trust their internal team to follow through and not be wasteful.
I like that. How to be a trusted advisor. You know, it's one thing to actually know what the problem is. It's another thing to be able to communicate the problem and find the right solution. But then I think probably a part that falls short for a lot of folks is once you get the money and once you have it in place, are you doing your due diligence to come back around and quantify the results and the success of this project?
You know, and I think that also ties into yet another opportunity for those in IT is to simply showcase these results, but do it in a way that shows it as a win for the organization, not yes. you. This is not about you.
Yes.
And when you focus on those results, good things will come to you. Eventually, they'll figure it out, you know, but if you can focus on what the results are and how this plays a key part for various departments in your organization, whatever the win is, really focus on that and everything else is going to follow.
Yeah. I mean, at the end of the day, right? I mean, look, it's a business. It's a professional setting. It's supposed to be cold and logical. It's supposed to be based off mathematics and numbers, but a business is just a collection of people. So at the end of the day, this is just people. And that's what you're dealing with. And you build trust with people the same way, whether you're in a technology setting or a private setting. You know, it's really all the same stuff. And the sooner you wrap your head around that and start treating it like that, the more successful you would be at actually realizing the end result. Because being right has nothing to do with this. This is not about being right, right? It's not about knowing the answer. That is the least important part of this problem. It's about being able to build trust so that person can trust you when you come to them with that information.
Well said, well said. So a few weeks back, we had a live panel session at VMworld, and we talked about the future of IT and how we all will fit in. And one of the questions that came from the audience to the panel was, what if you have a situation like this where you're trying to present a certain new technology or a new solution to your leadership, and they just don't bite? Like, then what?
Well, I think my first take on that is that oftentimes the initial response is, well, what's wrong with the organization? I think one needs to look at themselves in the mirror at that point and say, what can I do better in order to communicate what the challenges are and what opportunities there are to improve this and what those results would be? And I was in attendance at that session as well, heard that. And that was my very first thought that I had in my mind based off of that question that was asked.
Yeah, it's look, yeah, you're asking them to make an investment, right? So if you just come to them and you say, yo, Kubernetes is the future, right? I mean, VMware's doing it, Google's doing it, everyone's doing it, we need to do it too. That is not going to get absolutely anywhere, right? It's just, it's not even going to be, they won't even hear what you're saying, honestly. They're just going to gloss over and be thinking about the email that just came in on their watch.
Yeah.
If instead you come to them with I think that we need to take a look at Kubernetes because for our application X, we struggle with rollout, we struggle with scale, we struggle with being able to do discrete patching. And the more I read about this technology, I really think that this could be the silver bullet. It's probably going to be a big migration, but I really think it's worth looking at. Like, that's the kind of conversation you want to have. It's not about, I'm the smart one, listen to me. It's about, I noticed a problem that I think we as an organization can solve, right? And how are we going to solve it? Maybe that's using open source software. Maybe that's buying something. Maybe it's using some software or hardware that we already have in-house. But if that's where you keep the conversation, then honestly, it's just about reps, right? You don't get them the first time. Well, I don't know if you've ever tried to convince somebody of something in the real world, but no conversation ever goes, oh yeah, you know what? You are right. That's not how it works, right? Yeah. You have two or three dozen conversations and slowly over the course of 2 or 3 weeks, you move someone's opinion. You slowly open their eyes to the fact that they might be wrong and then help them find the path to being right. It's no different when you're making a technology decision. They're still people.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And to the example that you gave, it sort of points back to something Pete said earlier about communicating it, up-leveling it, but communicating the problem first and then the solution. And so instead of saying, we need to look at Kubernetes, you know, you may want to consider something like, currently, the way we deploy applications is X, and the problem with that currently, or the potential problem, could be Y, and the solution might possibly be something like Kubernetes for this reason, or some sort of cloud-native solution.
I mean, honestly, that's the DR conversation that I've been having for the past 5-6 years, right? The past 400 or 500 of these conversations. It's just sit down and just play what if with your boss. Just sit down with your boss and say, okay, boss, so what if a fire were to break out in that room right now? Let's just play this out, okay? So our email is in Office 365, so that's going to be okay. And SharePoint's up there too. But our ERP system is on-prem. All our online transactions are inside that room. Like, you just start running through the list. What would this actually mean, right? Game it out.
Yeah, game it out even in a higher level by saying, forgetting about the infrastructure, because I heard someone say recently, nobody cares about the infrastructure. They care about the workloads, right? So I would even up-level it and say, how long do you think we can go without access to ERP? You know, how long do you think we can go without access before it starts to make changes financially to us as a business? Without even talking about infrastructure, without even talking about vendors, like literally, like if our customers cannot access our content, for how long do you think it becomes a problem?
Yeah, no, I don't disagree with that at all. I think it's an element of who you're talking to, right? The closer you are to the internal IT staff, the closer you're going to be to the actual applications, just because they know what works. But yeah, as you move up that chain, that detail needs to get to disappear because it's not important.
I like it. All right, Pete. So what happens if we've done the proposal and we fail? What do we do then? Do we just look for another job?
Yeah. Well, I think you don't have to spend a long time in IT to experience that sense of failure in one way or another. So the first thing that I would recommend there is just don't take it personal. Really, this is about the company and whatever is a top priority for the company at that time. If there are key decision makers that they say, no, not right now, and which is generally the answer. It's no, not ever, you know, for eternity. It's just no, not right now.
Yeah.
And once again, you can use this to your advantage because that following year, just as Glenn mentioned, that following year, you already have things queued up for helping them understand why this is, you know, on the top five of company objectives for that year. The other thing too is that surprisingly, some of my most effective software implementations were ones that never existed, ones that were rejected, that in hindsight, I looked at them and I thought, you know, they were right. That wasn't the right time for that. And so when I think about that, you want to use that simply as that, you know, as that opportunity.
I like that.
And do not, when it comes to IT, like, you have got to keep your force field up and always be aware of the sunk cost fallacy. You cannot keep doing something just because you've been doing it for a long time and it took a lot of effort. If it's not working, it is super important that you find the way to say that it's not working.
Absolutely. I completely agree. Yeah, that's hopefully that lesson rings very loud in the world of IT, because things are constantly changing, and that lesson should be very clear for sure. All right, gents, interesting topic. I love talking about higher level topics that can really focus on a wide array of products and solutions. That's what it's all about. I'll be sure to leave some posts to the blogs that we've talked about on this post on the show notes of this page. Pete, Glenn, you guys both going to VMworld Europe, I'm assuming?
Oh, yeah.
Yes, indeed. We'll be there.
And hopefully you'll be doing some of those meet the experts, probably one of my favorite things to do at VMworld, where you get to actually talk to customers about these types of things.
I mean, the meet the experts is where I had these conversations that we're talking about.
Yeah, yeah. That to me is the unspoken true fun of VMworld. I mean, I love meeting with customers. I love, you know, doing sessions and podcasting and networking with the community. All that's good. But man, when I look back at the very end of it, having those roundtable discussions and just talking about, you know, specific customer problems, just one-on-one, to me, I don't think it gets any better than that.
Well, and to come full circle and put a little bow on it, like, honestly, I think the reason why is because those conversations are a little microcosm of what we're actually talking about just now, right? It's solution focused. Here's the problem that my company has. And then you're collaborating. It's not just the expert, it's the other attendees who are at the table sharing their experiences, their ideas, and working towards building those menu options, building up the, well, what should I do from here? And maybe it's go look at VMC or go look at this or go look at that. But yeah, they walk out of those MTEs with a game plan for, okay, I've got five or six other things I've got to do after talking to that person.
Yeah, I think one of the things for me that I come out of those meet the expert sessions is yet again the reminder of, why does this matter? You know, why is this solution there in the first place? And answering the question why is ultimately a key part of everyone's role, whether you're in IT, if you're in management, if you're on the solution side of things, you're trying to answer the question to why. And I think that's a really good exercise for everyone.
Absolutely. Good stuff. All right, Pete, Glenn, gentlemen, thank you so much for joining today. For those listening, if you want to get in touch with these gents, their information is on the show notes of the page. If you are going to VMworld Europe, be sure to check out their sessions and also sign up for a Meet the Experts so we can nerd out on these types of conversations specifically. And yeah, good stuff. Gentlemen, enjoy the rest of your day.
You too, Pete. Bye for now.
Yeah, thanks, Pete.
Bye for now, indeed. Hey, last thing. If you're going to VMworld Barcelona, we hope to see you at the Virtually Speaking Podcast live session. It's HCI 1894 PE. We've got Frank Dennerman, Duncan Epping, William Lamb, and Ken Wernerberg as guests. And we're going to be basically doing a live podcast talking about the ever-changing IT landscape and how it affects all of us. And we might be giving away some pretty awesome V-speaking swag, so hope to see you there. All right, well, that music tells me it's time to go, so if you want to get in touch with us, send us an email at podcast@vmware.com. You can subscribe to us on your podcast app of choice by searching Virtually Speaking Podcast. You can catch this and all episodes at vspeakingpodcast.com. A big thanks to Glenn and Pete for talking about being more persuasive with leadership. We're back next week, but until then, bye for now. All right, I'll clean that up in post.
He means he's going to delete my bye for now.
Are you kidding? Yeah. That's gold.
That's the euphemism for yeah, that's not going to make it.
I always try to throw at least one in randomly.
That's lovely.
Enough of this jibber jabber.